Basic cosmology. Then I'm gonna explain you what is a bouncing universe and why do we talk about this model. Then I'm gonna show you how we can get one, and we're gonna use a specific model, effective model called the Liouville standard model. Then I can show you analytical results and then numerical results. Okay, so basic cosmology one. So first we know that the universe is now expanding, and what we use is a Hubble parameter. So this Hubble parameter is now has a value of 70 kilometers per second per megaparsec. That's the last estimate. And for example, from that you can compute or see, observe the galaxy motion, and you know that the velocity is equal to h times the distance between the galaxy and the observer. So h is a very important thing in cosmology. And another thing that you might want to use it is comoving coordinates. So comoving coordinates are coordinates that are fixed when the universe expands. So you can see on the picture that on the left, if you pick a certain galaxy, you're going to be at the intersection of some line. And when your universe expands, your coordinates also expand, and you're going to find that the galaxies are at the same position. Another very important thing is called the scale factor. It's A of t, so it's kind of like the radius of the universe. And this is linked to the Hubble parameter in the following way. So you have h equal a dot over a. So the Hubble parameter is a derivative of the scale factor over the scale factor. So here is a standard picture, standard Big Bang picture. So you start with a Big Bang and quantum fluctuation. Then you enter the inflation era. So this is a very, very fast expansion of the universe. And you actually, officially in this model, you need that to observe the flatness of the universe as we see today. And also to solve some problem called the horizon problem. And then you have all the new age, and we are here. So that's a standard Big Bang picture, but we cannot necessarily be sure of it. And now you can ask yourself a question, what if time existed before the Big Bang? Because the Big Bang is a singularity, and usually we don't really like that in physics. So you have some alternative theories that can get rid of this singularity, and this would be a big bounce, so what I'm talking about. And the time would run much before the Big Bang. And the time would have always existed. So basic cosmology two. So you have to choose the way your space-time is deformed or the way your space-time is evolved. So usually for cosmology, you choose a homogeneous and isotropic expanding or contracting universe. Usually it's expanding, but when you have a bounce, you start with a contracting phase and then an expanding phase. So to get something homogeneous and isotropic, you choose a very basic metric, which is called the standard Friedmann-Lemaître-Robertson-Walker FLRW metric. So here you have the speed of light, here you have the scale factor that tell you how the space is going to inflate. And then one of the major equations you're going to use to know how your universe is gonna evolve, so how it's gonna contract and then expand, is you're gonna link the energy density, so the matter content and whatever you have in the universe, to your Hubble parameter. So this is one of the Friedmann equations. So it relates the square of the Hubble parameter to the energy density. So now we're gonna see how to create a bounce and a non-singular one, if possible. So here is a standard, very basic picture of a bounce. So you start with a contracting phase. You go to a minimal size, non-zero size. This would be the equivalent of the Big Bang, but no, you just have a very small radius for the universe, and then you re-expand. So during the contracting phase, since your universe decreases, you need your scale factor to have a negative derivative. So A dot is negative, meaning that the radius of the universe shrinks. This means that h is negative because h is a dot over a. Then in the expanding phase, You just have H is positive because you want your radius of the universe to increase, so A is increasing and A dot is positive. And between the two at the bouncing point, exactly, you have H equals zero. So to get a bounce, you need to go through this point, so H equals zero. So if you remember the former equation, H equals zero means just that the total energy density is equal to zero at this point. And you need an extra condition, because you could imagine that if you start with a big infinite universe, it could shrink and never re-expand again. So you would get a big crunch and just this period of time and not the expansion. And today we see the expansion. So you need at this point to have a kind of re-acceleration. So what you need is dTh that is positive. And dTh positive is equal to rho plus the pressure that is negative according to another equation. And then this means that the state parameter, so this is also something very standard in cosmology, W equal pressure over rho has to be minus one, smaller than minus one. And this violates one of the principles that you're officially not supposed to violate, which is the null energy condition. So you really need a very specific type of matter and type of thing to get this effect, at least in this context of matter bounds. So why do we want this type of thing and not just a standard Big Bang? The Big Bang is a singularity, so we're very happy to avoid it. So you avoid it by going to this minimal radius and not by going to this Big Bang point where you don't really know what's happening. It also avoids the transplanquin problem, so I'm going to explain what it is in the next slide. And it can give you a scale invariant power spectrum for the scalometric fluctuation. So right now, in the sky, we can observe the CMB, cosmic microwave background, and this gives you some hint about what happened before, and this gives you the power spectrum, and we know it's scale invariant, so one of the constraints we need is to satisfy the scale invariance of the model. So here are some other examples. So you can also have, instead of having one bounce, you can have a succession of bounces, and then you have a cyclic model. So things would contract, expand, and we would be in one of the expanding phase. So here is what's a transplanquin problem. So that's inflationary cosmology. So in the transplanquin problem, we observe things here that are inside our Hubble radius. So the Hubble radius is this thing. So we observe things, okay, the red line cross the blue line, and we hear it's all what we can observe. But if you trace back this perturbation, so that's a wave we observe, a long, long time ago, you see that it enter below the Planck lens just because of inflation and the different period of the universe. So what you see now in the far past would be below the Planck lens. And you know that in physics, you don't really know what's happening below Planck lens, so you want to avoid to do that. And this is called a transplanquin problem, because what we observe today is not supposed to be below a scale that we don't know. Like, we don't know the physics below Planck scale. So what's happening today is not supposed to go below that scale. So in a matter bounce, you avoid this problem. So on this plot, it's a bit harder to see because it's in Kalmovic scale, but you just avoid this problem. If you start here with a perturbation and you trace it back, it will never go below the Planck lens. So that's an advantage, one of the advantages of the matter bounce. So now we know what is a bounce. You need to get it. So you need to put the right type of matter to be able to get this effect of shrinking universe and then expanding universe. To do that, we're going to use the higher derivative Lagrangian, so something initially created by Lee and Wick in the 70s. So we start with a higher derivative Lagrangian. So it looks like a standard Lagrangian. Here we have a higher derivative term. Here we have just a potential, the mass term. I'm adding up radiation to it and the coupling between radiation and matter. So starting with this Lagrangian, if you do a field redefinition and you diagonalize the mixing term that you get, you end up with two fields, phi 1 and phi 2, and they have opposite kinetic term and opposite mass term. And one of the field will eat up the energy of the other one, and that's how you can get this total energy density that will vanish and will re-expand again. Okay, and the point is we add up radiation here, so we add up some kind of electromagnetic field. And in standard cosmology, you know that electromagnetic field will dominate over matter. So to prevent this domination, the total domination by the gauge field, we add up a coupling. Hopefully this coupling will drain energy from this field. Because what we want is we want all the energy density to go to zero, but we want after that to re-expand. So if we just add up radiation, we know we're going to have a big crunch. So everything will go to zero, and you will not get a re-expansion. So we choose a coupling of a certain shape, this shape. So it just couple of the scalar field, phi square and phi 2 square to f mu nu, f mu nu. And you have two constants, C and D, that are three parameters. Okay, so we use this model as a toy model because if you know a bit quantum field theory, you know that the Hamiltonian is embedded from below. So you have a Gaussian instability, and usually you don't really like that. Or you can use that, and it's really an effective model. It's not supposed to... Okay. Okay, so again, I'm going to show you how you get a bound from the equation. So we have the Friedmann equation, H squared is proportional to the total energy density. And your goal is to get H equals zero and to avoid a big crunch, meaning you need H dot positive at some point. So you need your thing to re-expand at some point. So you start with a matter-dominated area. You consider a perfect fluid. You neglect metric fluctuation and the back reaction of this metric on the other field. Okay, the dynamics. You split your field into a background field, like phi of t, and then a perturbation, so phi of t and z. And so epsilon is a small parameter. For your gauge field, you just consider a plane wave, and you pick a particular direction. In doing that, you break isotropy, but it should not matter because what you want to study is if you get a bounce or not, and not necessarily the whole and full perfect answer. So this is enough to know if you get a bounce or not. Then you get the equation of motion, so for the field phi 1, the field phi 2, and the coupling part. So you have this coupling in the energy density, so that's the total energy density. Then you parameterize your scale factor in the following way. Usually in cosmology, you just choose a power law. So the scale factor is just proportional to t to the power of p. And p is linked to the state parameter. So it's linked to rho and the pressure in the following way. And you work with rho scale field because it's also easier to see the equation of motion. So u equal a times phi. So here are some analytical results and analytical equation. So that's your background equation. And the solution are Hankel function. So far away from the bounds, you just have damped or anti-damped oscillations. So it's just a parallel times the cos. And closer to the bounds, so A times eta, much smaller than one of the mass, you have no oscillations, but still a parallel evolution. Then you can study the first order. So, and then when you have that, you have your mod K, and you have a different situation depending on if you work with large wavelengths or short wavelengths. Then you have the same thing for the gauge field. You have your equation, and you see that your coupling term gives you an extra part, that is this one. And you have the following solution. Gamma zero is just a background solution, so just an oscillating function. Then you have to add up this part. And then you do that to the second order, and you can have the energy density up to order two. Okay, so no numerical results. It's maybe easier to see like that. So here is a four type of energy density plot. So you have the standard scalar field, the black line. The red line is a ghost one, so the phi 2 one that gives you a negative contribution. So these are just absolute values. So that's a normal scalar field. That's a ghost scalar field, so it's phi 2 that has a negative energy density. The green line comes from the coupling, and the blue line comes from the gauge field. So that's, you see the evolution at this point, at point zero, you see that something is happening. So that's just when you consider one mode, so when you pick one value for K. This plot corresponds to the state parameter having the following shape. So at the beginning, I told you that your model will violate the null energy condition, so it goes W, which is P over rho, will go far below minus 1, and you can see it happening here. And to this picture corresponds the following scale factor here, and you see the bonds happening because A of T is shrinking and then it's expanding again. So that's just for one mode. Now, if you take two modes with specific initial velocities, here is the plot you get. So you see the plot is very different, and at the end everything will go, will cancel out, but you won't have a bounce happening. You have a big crunch because just your whole energy just vanish and never re-expand again. So this will just show that you prove that your bounce is unstable in this case, unless you really choose the initial parameter carefully. And maybe by choosing the coupling between, okay, so it was C and D, the coupling between the gauge field and the scalar field, you can create a more stable bounce. And now I have some other question about how to construct a Gauss-free non-singular bounce and how to construct bouncing models inspired from the standard models. And could we prove if this is possible or not? Thanks for your attention.
So here you are asking how to construct a Gauss-free non-singular bouncing models. Actually, I would prefer this kind of models without assuming to violate the null energy condition.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So my question is about this because first, how bad for you is that you have to assume such a strange energy? And second, so it's true that if you violate the null energy condition, you can avoid the initial singularity. But
yeah,
you can have other kind of singularities, such as the big rip or the big break in the future, for example. So is your model free from these singularities?
Yeah, yeah. In this model, you don't see any big, weird singularities coming later. It's just the bounce phase that is something weird, and you have to be careful how to treat that. And, of course, yeah, the big problem is that you have a ghost in this model. So you use that as a toy model just to see how it works and how, like, a next step is to find something more robust from the theoretical point of view. But you don't have extra singularities appearing. You just solve the Big Bang one. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I have two short questions. The first one is, is there actually an experimental way to test this except for waiting for the next bounce?
Experimentally, what we wanted is a scale invariant spectrum, which is something quite important. And that's the CMB that we see. So that's one of the main things that cosmologists work with.
So you mean you can recreate the CMB?
Yeah. The scale invariants give you what you want. If you have the scale invariants, you're kind of safe. And then there is probably some gravitational wave emission signature, but I'm not even sure. I think you're not supposed to see any gravitational waves or in this type of bouncing model. So these two things, gravitational wave, I think, can just also get rid of this model in a certain range.
Okay, and if can I for just a small second question? And the second question is maybe a bit more philosophical than physics. In the motivation, I think you said for this kind of model is like to avoid the time zero, and mm-hmm. do you think a pervading time is more natural?
I ask myself these questions. No, for me it's I had exactly the same comment. You replace the Big Bang singularity by an infinite time that was always been there, and maybe from a physical point of view, it's easier to believe in an infinite time than in something that you don't know how to describe. I agree with you on this point.
Any further comments or questions?